Hello everyone, welcome back. It is the 3rd of January, living in the past there. It's the 3rd of January, 2015. So Happy New Year to everyone, or I guess from a non-dual perspective, I could say something like Happy New Moment, or and then I would say it again in this moment, a happy new moment, and a happy new moment, and happy new moment. Of course, it's a bit non-functional. So it's a cool morning here in Winnipeg. We got a dump of snow last night, about 10 millimeters or so, and it's been a great winter thus far, pretty warm overall, but in the last week or so we've had a couple of days that dipped down to about 31 below. All in all though, it's been pretty comfortable. I've had only a few people write in this month with questions and comments. So I think this month's response will be a bit of a ramble. We'll see what arises as we go along. Before we get down to that, I want to thank those who did write in, and I want to thank those who sent in donations and those who ordered Udescence over the website. And as always, I want to thank Marcus Fellows for establishing this website in the first place and for continuing to post these responses each month. For anyone who might be new to the website, if you're listening to this response and you're having some difficulty in relating to the things that I'm saying, the things that I'm presenting, then it might be advisable to go to the two main talks on the website. If you go to the Listen Dropbox and you scan down to Talks, you will find the two main talks. One is titled An Overview of Spiritual Awakening, and the other is titled Acknowledging the Moment. And they would give you the broadest sense of what it is that I'm presenting here. And again, just a reminder to anyone who might be ordering the new DVD from Non-Duality Press. Non-Duality Press has got two DVDs of mine. The first one is titled Explorations with Daryl Bailey, and the new one is titled Challenging the Fantasies, so if you're after that new one, make sure that that's the title. That's the one that has about 4.5 hours of excerpts from my visit to London a little over a year ago. And with that, we'll get down to what's been sent in. So a first person wrote in saying, Hi Daryl, I hope you had a nice Christmas. I have a thread of thought which I would love to hear you talk about. Here it goes. It seems to me that some people believe there is choice, and this to them is freedom, whilst other people believe that there is no choice, and this to them is freedom. Or to put it another way, some people do not believe in choicelessness, and other people do not believe in choice. It also seems that somehow those people who do not believe in choicelessness are also able to prove to themselves that they can perpetrate cause and effect, i.e. make things happen. And those people who do not believe in choice are able to prove to themselves that there is no cause and effect. From a non-dual perspective, could it be said that those people who do not believe in choicelessness are wrong or deluded? Or is it more the case that nature simultaneously presents contradictory expressions? If so, doesn't this go against the law of non-contradiction? My main interest with this line of thought is one of respect, respect for otherness. From a non-dual perspective, how really can opposition not be wrong? And how really can one respect wrongness? Kind regards and with much gratitude. Okay, so the main question here is, from a non-dual perspective, could it be said that those people who do not believe in choicelessness are wrong or deluded? Or is it more the case that nature simultaneously presents contradictory expressions? If so, doesn't this go against the law of non-contradiction? So, no, it's not the case that, from this non-dual perspective, it's not the case that people who do not believe in choicelessness are wrong or deluded. In the same way that it's not the case that people who do believe in choicelessness are right. That's why I'm always saying to people that this is not a matter of right or wrong. A non-dual perspective has nothing to do with the proper way of looking at existence. There is no proper way of looking at existence. Any expression of existence is a totally unexplainable event or eventing. From a non-dual perspective, it's the acknowledgement that in this moment we all have the impression something is happening and there isn't any way to define it in any way whatsoever. So ideas of choice or choicelessness, they don't apply. And any teachers, any presenters that are focusing on these definitions of existence and trying to come up with some ultimate definition of existence, an intellectual definition of existence, none of those people are speaking from a non-dual sensibility. From this non-dual perspective, it's an examination of the limitation of thought and the fantasies of thought. The fact that thought, even within its own logic, presents a very basic fact that these thoughts can't possibly be a true explanation of existence. So, for instance, within this question, this person has asked, is it the case that nature simultaneously presents contradictory expressions? And if so, doesn't this go against the law of non-contradiction? Well, it doesn't ever present anybody with contradictory expressions. So in this moment, it feels a certain way. So we have the what we call the world of duality, light and dark, up and down, hot and cold, clarity and confusion, these so-called opposites. But a non-dual consideration is pointing out that opposites never exist. They never have existed. So in this moment, you may be feeling very confused. Now, if you're actually feeling what we would call confused in this moment, there isn't any opposite to it. You're not feeling clear at the same time. If you're feeling joyous, you're not feeling sorrowful at the same time. There is no opposite to this moment. It's also the case that in the larger event of the moment, if you're sitting there apparently feeling happy and you see somebody across the room that seems to be apparently sad, then we get the notion that existence is simultaneously expressing opposites. However, from a non-dual perspective, it becomes an examination of these definitions. Like defining yourself as happy, what does that mean? When you came out of the womb, this was a totally unexplainable happening. Just an event. An unfragmented event. Or an eventing. A vibrant buzz and tingle, a pulsing, luminous vibrancy, simply occurring. You can ask, any child that is 1 hour old, could you point out the opposites in existence to me? Could you explain why it is that existence simultaneously presents contradictory expressions? And what do you think that child that's 1 hour old is going to do? I mean, the child probably isn't going to even pay any attention to you. What you're saying is just gobbledygook. It's just sound. You could be saying blix, flute, wazzle, dizzly donk, whataferoo. What you're saying has no more meaning to the child than those words have meaning to us. In fact, for the child, you're not even anything separate from the rest of the event. The whole buzzing, tingling, happening. Now, in everybody's storyline, we all have the storyline that it takes years for people to train us to focus on certain portions of this totally unexplainable happening, to focus on certain apparent forms and bark certain sounds to name those apparent forms. And so we begin to intellectually divide up this holistic, mysterious dance of the moment. We intellectually divide it into apparent forms and give those forms certain names. And part of that is we see a certain apparent form and we say that's up. We see another apparent form and we say that's down. We identify another apparent form and we say that's sadness. We identify another apparent form and we say that's happiness. However, all of this is just meaningless sound pointing to portions of one great event, like the flowing of a river, or one great happening like an ocean. And so to do this is exactly the same as pointing to one ripple in an ocean and another ripple that, one ripple that apparently is going in one direction in an ocean and another ripple that's going in the opposite direction in an ocean, and saying that what we have is two different things that are opposite and in opposition to each other or contradictory to each other, but we don't have two separate things that are opposite or contradictory to each other. We have one event, an unfragmented, holistic dance, a vibrancy, a luminous pulsing and tingling, simply expressing itself. And it's only in imagination that it has any particular form. Everybody's most basic sense of existence is that everything is changing. So whatever this is, whatever this eventing of this moment is, it has no particular form. And the idea that it has a particular form in opposition to some other particular form is entirely an imagining. The world of form is just an appearance. There seem to be stable forms, but none of us has the impression that anything is staying exactly the same for 500 years and then disappearing overnight. We have the impression that everything that appears goes through changes from moment to moment, growing older, and eventually fades away. So that what we're actually dealing with here is movement, is action, is a process. Everything is action. A vibrant liveliness. A universal functioning. A holistic functioning. Simply happening, simply occurring. Now, in the same way that when you were apparently 1 hour old, you didn't have a clue as to what any of this was, you still don't have a clue as to what any of this is. It is still a totally mysterious eventing, a totally unexplainable dynamic. It's very simple to say what it isn't. It's not a bunch of separate forms. It's not anything describable, because it doesn't have any fundamental form to be described. It's not anything nameable, because those names are simply meaningless sounds. I mean, in a different country with a different language, you would get a different sound. So let's start using sounds like blix and flute and wazzle and waterfaroo and dizzly donk and heckajack and oodapoot, and we can spend all afternoon just thinking that we know something, but actually we don't know anything. There's not even a we to define. From this non-dual perspective, thought, these labels, these interpretations are just pitifully inadequate. They are not a tool for defining existence in any true way. And there is no other tool for defining existence in any true way. So the whole notion of opposites, of contradiction, all of that is just seen to be a total fantasy. And the whole idea that you can define something as wrong in this expression and some other portion of it as right is just it's a colossal arrogance of thought. That's like going to the ocean and sitting on the shore of the ocean and pointing to one wave and say, that's a wrong wave. And oh, how are we going to stamp out those wrong waves? Oh, they're just terrible. They're moving, that wave's moving in opposition to this wave, and this wave is the right wave. And I mean, if you want to go to the beach and sit around thinking that kind of stuff, great. That's totally fine if that's what you like to do. But those of us with a non-dual sensibility, that's not what we like to do. Instead, perhaps, there is an appreciation and wonder at this beautiful eventing of the ocean, this wild, mysterious happening simply presenting itself. And in the same way, the ocean of existence is a wild, mysterious happening, an eventing, a processing, an actioning, simply occurring, unformed, unnameable, uncaused. And maybe in that acknowledgement, we can begin to acknowledge that even all of these so-called thoughts that arise and pass are simply a mysterious happening, and there's no way of saying what those are either, even within our own storylines. The storyline says that we only call them thought because somebody told us to call them thought. The whole notion that we came out of the womb, when we apparently came out of the womb, we didn't have the notion that we came out of the womb. That's a storyline somebody told us to use. So the happening of this moment is still the same incomprehensible happening it's always been. Just this vibrant buzz and tingle of this moment, the luminosity, all of this is simply pointing to this vibrant eventing. If you ask yourself right now, what is there when there is no thinking? And rest at the end of the question. It doesn't feel like there's a bleak emptiness. There's a pulsing and tingling and light and dark and hot and cold, and you know, these words simply pointing to this warming, cooling, sounding, silencing, vibrating, pulsating, buzz and tingle. These are simply pointing to something that's not a thought. So when you ask the question, what is there when there is no thinking, and you rest at the end of the question, it doesn't feel like there's nothing. But what is not a thought, and from this non-dual perspective, it's not definable. So before you started thinking, I am, or I am this, or I am that, you existed. Before your apparent parents and school system began conditioning you, training you to bark certain sounds, to look at life a certain way, you existed. Be that. Because that's still what exists. That's still what's happening. Lay aside all thought and you come to this fundamentally unexplainable happening. And thought is simply an expression of that. And thought, thinking, is also a totally unexplainable happening, and all of it is happening spontaneously, automatically, organically, fluidly. So the whole question of you respecting otherness, or respecting opposition, just melts away. That whole consideration simply melts away because there is no otherness. There is no opposition. As I said, if you want to sit on the shores of an ocean and have some intellectual view that one wave is the wrong expression of the ocean and another wave is the right expression of the ocean, and that we really have to teach ourselves to have respect for those wrong waves, and we really have to try to stamp out those opposing waves, by all means, do that. But that has nothing to do with a non-dual perspective. From a non-dual perspective, there's just the ocean presenting itself, a wild, mysterious, beautiful, exotic, spontaneous, unpredictable happening. Simply happening. All right, moving on to the next person. Someone has written in to describe a very distressing situation that he finds himself in. He's written a very long email, so I will just paraphrase a lot of this. He says that for many, many years, he's been living without working. He's been living on savings. He lives in a house with his parents. He's about 50 years old. Basically, he's retreated to his room in the house, and that he really has allowed his relations with his friends and family and the world in general to pretty much wither away. So he sees himself as a hermit, living as a hermit, but in this process, there has been some mechanical equipment nearby that was rather noisy and gave off a certain loud vibration that he found very uncomfortable to live with. And he's been living with that for a number of years, and it's gotten to the point where even when the vibrations, the loud vibrations of that machinery are turned off, he's become very sensitive to a more subtle vibration of the moment, and it's really making it impossible for him to sleep or to concentrate. And he eventually comes to say that all I was doing was living a life of peaceful contemplation and meditation, trying to be as harmless to the world as possible, and allowing many of his inner impulses to wither. All I wanted was silence and stillness and emptiness and peace. Nothing in this world interested me. Nothing of the senses or the mind seemed worth gathering, worth grasping. Now my mind and peace and space are completely shattered beyond repair, and my physical survival seems to not be possible. I never knew that such suffering was possible for a human being. I am unable to see the physicality of what is happening to me as simply mind stuff, like thoughts or emotions. What type of universe is this that would allow this situation to develop and to continue in this way? It does not seem to be benign to me. It now seems to be a cold and horrific place that finds a living being's weakest point and hits it hard. If you're lucky, death will be reasonably quick. If you're unfortunate, death will be a long, slow torture of both the mind and the body, shattering any space or peace that was previously present. I thank you for listening. So there's really not much I can offer in response to this person writing in, other than to point out that the process of so-called spiritual exploration, the process of meditation and contemplation, is never a process of trying to hold back the world. It's never a process of trying to hold out the expressions of existence. So as he states here, all he wanted was silence and stillness and emptiness and peace, but he's created some idea of some imaginary silence and stillness and emptiness and peace, and he wanted that, and he wanted to hold away the world. From this non-dual perspective, awakening to the world or the realization of existence in its true nature is acknowledging the vibrant, luminous, buzzing, tingling, eventing of the moment. So that this is not some fantasized notion of removing all sound. Even in the quietest place, there is what we call the sound of silence, or in the yoga traditions, the nada. And this is a kind of high-pitched electrical sound that many people experience in quiet situations. And it's very much a portion of my own eventing, within my own supposed story of spiritual exploration. When I was 14 and was really meditating 3 hours a day, exploring some of the more formal meditations of spirituality, the sound of silence became very obvious. It was expressing itself in every moment, and at certain apparent moments, it was as loud as a jet engine. Now, there's no way to remove that buzz and tingle of existence. That is part and parcel of the dance of existence. So, to find any peace within that is a matter of removing, or a matter of letting go of, any ultimate opposition to it. This is the dance of life, presenting itself the way it presents itself. Now, it's natural for anyone to try to avoid any unnecessary, loud, disturbing sounds. But the fact of the matter is, your very fundamental essence is a buzz and tingle. It's not something that can remove itself from what we would call sound. Existence itself contains a certain degree of buzz and tingle. It's not a thought. Now, for this particular individual, I know that there are certain people who have an extreme sensitivity, what seems to be an extreme sensitivity to sound and to vibration. And a good portion of their expression will be attempting to explore that situation to find what they can actually live with and how they can live life in a way that is functional. So I suggested a couple of ways that this person might reduce any external sound and come to acknowledge whatever remaining sound and vibration there might be. And in reducing, excuse me, in reducing the external sound as much as possible, he might begin to consider living with the remaining sound and have a chance to explore simply resting as this buzz and tingle. But there are no guarantees in this exploration. There's nothing in a non-dual perspective, there's nothing in spirituality that says your life is necessarily going to be happy. I mean, there are a lot of teachers out there egotistically saying, if you do what I did, you will be just as happy as I am. But that's a patently false statement. Life is always a mixed bag of things, and within the world of apparent form and storylines, life is always a mixed bag of things. There will be some joy and there will be some sorrow. But we don't get to decide how much of one and how much of the other we're going to get. In our apparent exploration of our life, we will probably find some ways, seem to find certain ways to make our life easier. But it's never a situation where we are something in absolute control of existence. We don't even exist as anything apart from existence. Any urge to explore life isn't even our creation. And any urge to explore it in a particular way isn't our creation. There is no personal doing in this moment. There is a totally unexplainable, vibrant occurring. A buzzing, tingling, eventing, simply expressing itself. Again, let me emphasize that I'm not telling you you have to look at life in this way. I'm simply presenting a certain perspective. You either relate to it or you don't relate to it. What I'm presenting is not the one true way of looking at life. It's not the one and only healthy expression of existence. It's simply one of the totally unexplainable expressions of existence. From this non-dual perspective, like in this moment, there is no way for me to say what is happening right now. It's just happening. Whatever this is just happening. It's the only way it can happen. All right, so moving on. Another person has written in asking a question, and I had to pull this question off the computer at the library because I've been off work for a while, so I wasn't able to actually print it out. And so I'll just paraphrase the question. This person has written in to say that he's intrigued by a certain Zen statement, which is, awakening is sudden, deliverance is gradual. And he points out that his former teacher, Ramesh Balsekar, would explain that the realization of the totally unexplainable happening of the moment is sudden. But following that realization, there is what seems to be a gradual adjustment within a person's belief system to that realization. And this person is wondering whether other spiritual practices or perhaps a psychotherapy process, with a spiritual leaning would be helpful in kind of working out the adjustment of the apparent world of thought, our conceptual realm, to the realization that all of this is simply a totally unexplainable happening. So he goes on to ask me directly, have you undergone any gradual change in your emotional states? Are you free of all negative emotions and thoughts? And he says, my perspective would be very much appreciated. He wants to hear my own personal comments and experience in this. So, what would I say? Yes, it seemed as though there was the realization that none of the stories were true, and there is only this vibrant buzz and tingle of the moment. So from that apparent moment, the focus on explanations has, you know, within the world of apparent form and storyline, the focus on explanations is gradually falling away. So that at this point, in this moment, I really have no interest in explanation. So the interest is totally on the unexplainable vibrancy of the moment. The focus is on the unexplainable dance of the moment. So for most of you listening, your focus is on the storyline that Daryl is offering a response to a question, but I don't have any focus on that. I have no explanation for what's happening in this moment. It's simply happening. There is simply a vibrant buzz and tingle that is occurring in this way. This is simply occurring in this way. Whatever this is, it's simply occurring. Now, there is what I've been taught to call explanations, and there is what we all would call the general story that we have about existence. So I have all the apparent labels and storyline that you might have, but my underlying sense of that, the underlying feeling around that, is that I don't know what that is. I don't know what this is. So there is this apparent verbal response in this moment, but I don't know what this is. It just happens the way it happens. I'm not thinking this out. I'm not making this happen. It just happens. So, has there been a change in my emotional states? Within the world of stories, yes, because I'm not so bound up in those emotional states. I mean, it's as it becomes, as there's a recurring acknowledgement that none of this can be explained in any way whatsoever, it all simply becomes a mysterious happening, and there is less of an emotional bind because there's nothing to be emotional about. Now, that doesn't mean all apparent emotion has disappeared. It just means that there's much less apparent emotional involvement with existence, and yet there are still situations where, within the world of apparent form and storyline, I had a very, very close friend die a little over a year ago. And believe me, there was a lot of emotion around that. But I don't know what that is. All of that is ultimately an unexplainable happening. And it's simply presenting itself. Now, have all negative thoughts fallen away? That's an interesting question, because I don't know if I can identify a negative thought anymore. Like, there's just a totally mysterious happening. Like a negative thought. There's thought. There's what we would call thought. Somehow negative thoughts don't seem to be any kind of focus. Yeah, I don't know what to respond to that. It's just something that hasn't been present in a long time. Do I think a therapeutic process with a spiritual inclination, do I believe that that could help me adjust the world of apparent thought to my most fundamental realization about existence? No, because everything is just a totally unexplainable happening expressing itself. So I don't make any blanket statements about what a person should be or should be doing. To me, that's a very, within my own particular storyline, that's a cruel thing to do to another human being. It seems, again, within the storyline, it seems somewhat arrogant to think that I would be able to say what another person is supposed to be or what another person is supposed to do. Because from this non-dual sensibility, everything is the natural expression of existence. And within the world of apparent form, each and every expression is unique. So each and every expression, apparent expression, and that includes each and every apparent person, will only do what they're compelled to do. So I'm not going to give some blanket statement about what everybody else is supposed to do or what might be helpful or not helpful, because no matter what I say, they're going to do whatever feels right to them. They're going to do whatever they're compelled to do, and each of them is compelled to be a unique expression. So we can, I might be able to discuss a certain perspective on life with somebody, but there's no blanket statement for any of this. There's no blanket statement for what a person should be doing, what every human being should be doing or shouldn't be doing. I was invited to participate in some big seminar at a university a number of years ago. They were bringing the non-dual sensibility into the world of psychology, and in discussing the situation with the head of that seminar, that person expressed the idea that the meditative mind state is the optimum mind state for all human beings, which again, to me, is an absolutely ridiculous statement. The meditative mind state is the optimum mind state for any apparent human being that's compelled to have a meditative mind state. But it is of absolutely no interest to anyone who isn't compelled to have that mind state. And I'm not going to go around telling everybody they should have that mind state or they should be doing anything in particular. Be what you are. See, I could say be what you are, which in a way is telling somebody what to be, but it's not, because that's a ridiculous prescription. Be what you are. You're already it. Within the world of apparent form, you will have to be a unique expression. So you will simply apparently do what you do. It reminds me of the story of John Maine when he was passing away, the Christian meditation master. Yeah, when John Mayne was passing away and he was passing the leadership of his meditation organization to Lawrence Freeman, Lawrence Freeman was very concerned. Lawrence Freeman at that point felt that he might not be able to measure up to the leadership of that organization. And he was concerned that he might do something wrong, that he might go in the wrong direction. And he expressed this to John Mayne. And John Mayne just looked at him and smiled and said, "You'll do what you do." John Mayne didn't have any concern because there was no blanket statement as to what anything was supposed to be. Everything, no matter what occurs, everything is the natural expression of whatever this is, but there's no way of saying what it is. It's simply possible to say what it's not. It's not definable. And there is no evidence of anything or anyone influencing the happening of this moment. It just is what it is. All right, and a final person has written in saying, well, again, I took this off the library computer, so I just paraphrased the question. This person has written in saying that he came across an interview that I did. He found it fascinating and it prompted a burning question. And the question is that if everything is an expression of the divine, this person finds it hard to reconcile that expression with hate and killing, etc. He said, "I am an animal lover and despair at the suffering that those animals have to endure." So again, this whole thing, like, be very careful about imagining something called the divine. We get into this world of thought and we hear a word like the divine, and we have all kind of imaginings as to, the wonderful, joyous, beatific presence of the divine. And the divine basically is more a reference to the divinely mysterious happening of this apparent moment right now, this vibrant occurrence that we would call the actual experience of the moment, not a thought about it, not a description of it. And it's an acknowledgement that whatever this is that we call the actual experience of the moment, there's no way of truly saying what this is. We can't even truly say it's an actual experience. So it's just pointing to the vibrant liveliness of now. Again, if we ask ourselves the question, what is there when there is no thinking? At the end of the question, there's no thought, but it doesn't feel like there's nothingness. It feels like something is here now, but it's not a thought. So you could point to that as a luminous, radiant, vibrant pulse and tingle, which does its best to point to this eventing, this occurring, this dynamic, this formless dynamic. But that pointing doesn't really give it any particular form or any solid interpretation. Now, in acknowledging this totally enigmatic vibrancy, there's no possible way to define it as having hate or killing, or anything aggressive. There's no possible way to define it. So we can't define it as good or bad, hot or cold, up or down. Not in any true way. Because again, ultimately these words have no real meaning. They're simply pointing to apparent forms like light. which ultimately isn't a stable form. So is existence light right now? Well, wait a while, it's going to be dark. So then when it's dark, ask yourself, is existence dark? Well, wait a while, it's going to be light. Is it hot? Well, wait a while, it's going to be cold. And is it cold? Well, wait a while, it's going to be hot. Existence has no particular form. So this is very much like, in this non-dual realization, it's the realization of a flowing, a formless dynamic, a vibrancy that has no form. Some people like to use the word energy, an energetic processing, an energetic unformed dance that can't possibly be defined in any way. So the constant inclination to try to define it intellectually, this is very similar to trying to catch flowing water in a bucket. So you run into a river with a bucket and you pull out the water hoping that you're going to capture the flowing water, but when you look at in the bucket, you don't find flowing water. So it's just totally impossible to catch flowing water in a bucket. And it's entirely impossible to capture the flowing dynamic of this moment in ideas of static form. To give something a shape and say that it's a stable form is in absolute contradiction to what actually is. This is like taking photographs of smoke, still photographs of smoke, and then you show that photograph to somebody and you say, this is exactly what smoke looks like, but it's not at all what smoke looks like, because smoke doesn't have a form. Smoke is a vibrant, dynamic, flowing, a formless dance. So there's no way of describing what it is. You can't say it's one thing or another. And to say that it's a formless dance doesn't define it. It simply points to this action, this motion, this vibrancy, this fluidity. And in fact, ultimately, it's saying, just drop all of your thoughts and you come to something that's fundamentally not a thought. It's not a thought. And in the realization of this, the true nature of this moment, the original nature, the actual nature, the essential nature of this moment, in that realization, then thought itself becomes some totally enigmatic occurrence, an unexplainable happening. And in that acknowledgement, we don't have to be concerned about hate or killing or any of that ultimately, because whatever this is, isn't explainable in those terms. Within the world of apparent form and within the world of apparent storyline, those issues arise. But those descriptions have no bearing on what actually is happening here. Those descriptions have no relationship to what's actually happening here. As a totally mysterious event, yes, they are a portion of this totally mysterious eventing. But what they describe is an absolute fantasy. The happening of this moment is described as a world of people directing their own lives in an external world. A world of people influencing other people, other objects. All of that is fantasy. Absolute fantasy. from this non-dual sensibility. If anyone examines, if anyone's drawn to examine their storyline, to examine what their actual experience is, there is no experience that supports the notion of a describable event in this moment. There is no experience that supports the notion of a truly, the true possibility of describing what's happening here. There is no experience which supports the notion that we're influencing it in any way, that we're deciding to act in a certain way. All experience simply acknowledges a totally unexplainable happening, a vibrancy, something that's not a thought, something that has no form, something that simply presents itself or expresses itself. It just is what it is, and it does what it does, and there's no way of truly saying what it is. So again, this is simply from a non-dual perspective. If you're finding any of these responses confusing, then and you have an interest, then by all means check out the two main talks on this website. So that brings us to the end of the questions and comments that were sent in. And let me pause this, and I'll just wait and see what comes up next. Recently I found myself waking up in the night and just jotting down some notes, compelled to explore the possibilities of thought. I'll maybe go through some of these things. So here's a portion of what I wrote at one point. Everything is action, dynamic functioning. This action is an urge to express itself in whatever way it does. This formless urge is all that is. This urge cannot be seen, heard, touched, tasted, or smelled. It cannot be known. It simply is. So in this exploration of our life, we may start out just within the world of thought, and we begin to explore our basic storyline about existence. So we start to look at our storylines involving names and names that are attached to certain apparent forms, and we examine that storyline in relation to what we call our actual experience. So, you know, we look into our storyline, and we may find that our storyline says that when we came out of the womb, we had no storyline. In fact, the storyline says that when we came out of the womb, we didn't even have the storyline that we were coming out of the womb. And that story within our general storylines, the story that we came out of the womb and the story that we were a little child that grew up, we're taught to use that story. We're taught by our parents to bark certain sounds when they point to certain apparent forms. So they point to our nose, and if we say the word nose, if we're living in an English-speaking country and we say the word nose, then we get a big round of applause. Or at school, if we start saying more complicated labels, we get gold stars. And after a number of years, we begin to believe that these stories that we have about forms are true. So we can start examining that in relation to our actual experience. So for anyone who's lived life for any number of years, it eventually becomes obvious that every apparent form is changing. So it doesn't matter whether it's a house or a mountain or a car or a thought or a mood or a body or an atom or a molecule or a planet, it's changing in some way. And if we look at our most basic sense of existing, the seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking, all of that is moving and shifting as well. There are subtle changes or less subtle changes in all of those apparent aspects of the moment. So we begin to acknowledge that fundamentally we don't have an experience of stable form anywhere. Now this challenges our viewpoints of existence in a great way, because fundamentally the feeling of the moment is that it's flowing like a river, and yet we put so much focus on descriptions of form and defining life in terms of stable form, things, various things that are stable. We don't see them as an action, we see them as some kind of stable form. So those descriptions, they may be of some apparent practical use during the day, so that I could, if I'm feeling thirsty, I can say, may I have a glass of water? But if we really examine the situation, looking at life in that way is not really dealing with reality. It's simply dealing with functioning, or it's some aspect of functioning during the day, but it's not really helping us understand existence as any kind of reality. What we call a glass of water is an apparent form that has no lasting form. That glass will dry out and eventually crack and disappear, and it will eventually become particles that are so small we'll say that it has returned to the form of energy. And that thirst is not any stable form. The thirst varies from moment to moment, and when it is apparently quenched with water, the thirst disappears and will reappear at some point, but it has no stable form. And so it is with all of existence. We, on a day-to-day basis, we have these storylines where we believe that life is a bunch of describable forms, and that we actually know the names of those forms, that the names we have are somehow a true name for those forms. That truly is a table, and that truly is a wall, and that truly is a thought, and that truly is consciousness. But the fact of the matter is, we only call them these things because our mommy told us to call them that. Mommy told me to call them that. And so I've been calling them that every second of my life since then. But the fact of the matter is, mommy didn't know what any of these things were either. And having a name for them seems somewhat useful, but it's not any true name. It doesn't tell us what any of this is. This moment is fundamentally the same mysterious happening it was when it first presented itself. At that point when we say we came out of the womb, we even acknowledge that when we came out of the womb, we didn't have a story to say that we were coming out of the womb. So we all have the sense this is a totally unexplainable happening. Now, once it's realized that these thoughts can't describe the moment, again, it's like trying to catch flowing water in a bucket. You can't do it. It's like trying to capture the movement of smoke in a snapshot. You can't do it. It's impossible to do it. And in fact, if you put your focus on the snapshot instead of the flowing dynamic that smoke actually is, you have a totally incorrect impression of smoke. And so it is with our descriptions of stable form and these names that we use. We put so much focus on these names and notions of form that we have a totally incorrect sense of existence, a total fantasy. This moment, the happening of this moment, we all have the feeling that something is happening in this moment. This is a vibrant pulsing and tingling that has no particular form. The apparent thoughts are changing. The apparent moods are changing. The apparent body is aging. The apparent planet is changing. The weather is shifting. The economic climate is shifting. Everything is changing in some way. Even those things that seem very, very stable, like a mountain, we have the impression that that mountain eventually will wear away. That very old mountain ranges are nothing more than large hills in this moment. They might have been very dynamic, like the Alps. But a very old mountain range will wear away and be nothing more than a grouping of large hills. That's our general experience of existence. And even those things that we don't immediately experience, others who apparently have explored those to a great degree will make the same declaration that there is no stable form anywhere. Everything is changing. So once it's realized that the thoughts are not capable of describing existence, then as far as living with reality, the focus no longer goes on thought, because thought itself is a totally unexplainable happening that's moving and shifting and dancing. So the thought, there is this urge to move toward thought, to focus on thought, because there's the belief that reality or our actual identity can be found in thought. Once it's realized that reality and identity cannot be found in thought, then the interest in thought begins to fall away. And what becomes more interesting is the vibrant dynamic of the moment. So the actual happening of the moment, rather than some description of the moment, becomes more important. So what we call the actual happening of the moment might be what we call the rise and fall of the breath, the pulsations, the vibrations, the warmth, the coolness, the sounding, silencing, lightening, darkening, happening of the moment becomes more interesting because it's simply happening on its own. Now, if there's an acknowledgement of this vibrant pulse and tingle of the moment, this happening right now, if it's experienced as a vibrant pulse and tingle, which, you know, this is the reason that meditation has been so important over the apparent centuries, is that the most profound meditation in all of the great meditation traditions is simply that you lie down or sit down and do absolutely nothing. You make no effort to do anything at all. And in that, it's also the acknowledgement that you make no effort to cling to your descriptions. Normally, we're clinging to descriptions of existence, what we would call descriptions of existence. And we relax that clinging to description, because description is only one small portion of this larger event. So in resting that clinging and acknowledging the fuller dance of the moment, which does not require a doing, it's simply resting as the happening of the moment. If it's obvious that we're not making any effort to do anything, it will become obvious that everything is occurring on its own. And if we're not tightly clinging to some description that we know is not the truth, then what becomes obvious is the miraculous dance of the moment, which can't be explained in any way, and is presenting itself It has no particular form. It's always moving and shifting and dancing. Now, in that acknowledgement, it may be realized that all of this is occurring to its essential nature. Whatever this is presenting itself in its own way. So within the Chinese traditions, they would point out that there is only the way. There's no, you can't describe what is. There's only the way isness presents itself. So that this moment, which is, you know, many people use different words to point to the vibrant dynamic of the moment, the unformed buzz and tingle, the happening, the formless happening of the moment. But all of it is pointing to this automatic occurrence, this action, this dynamic of the moment presenting itself. So this dynamic itself is an urge to expression. It has no particular form. So it's an urge to action. The action itself is the urge. And in that acknowledgement, at that point, there's nothing to be concerned about. There's nothing to explain. There's nothing to do because our apparent doing is simply the urge of this unexplainable happening. The urge to participate, apparently participate in life, isn't our personal creation. It's not a personal urge. You could say it's the urge of the universe. Again, universe literally meaning undivided turning. Again, this action, this dynamic. The urge to approach a certain apparent problem is not anybody's personal doing. It's simply the urge of the universe, the urgent expression of the universe. That urge has its own flow, its own current, its own push. So it has its own momentum that no one's creating. It flows in a certain way. It expresses itself in a certain way. A moment is an instant of that momentum. A moment is an instant of an impersonal push to expression. And it's not a personal push, it's not a personal urge. And so it is within all of the major spiritual traditions, they will ultimately have a very bold statement saying, there is only God being God. Or there is only the Great Spirit being the Great Spirit. It's not even going anywhere. It's not moving to something else. It's always the Great Spirit simply being the Great Spirit. And the Great Spirit is this force or power or urge. It's not a describable thing. Or in the Taoist traditions, they will again point out that the sage lives a life of absolute contentment, simply awaiting the decrees of heaven. So the decrees of heaven are not something definable. It's not something you can see, hear, touch, taste, or smell. It's this inherent urge, the innate nature of whatever this is. But there's no way of saying what this is. It simply expresses its innate nature, its true nature. Its true nature is not a human being making decisions in a world of separate things. Its true nature is a totally holistic, unfragmented buzz and tingle, simply expressing its inherent nature. But there's no way of saying what that is. So, as Jiddu Krishnamurti used to say, if you're at all intelligent, I mean, this is a bit judgmental, but he would say, if you're in any way intelligent, you will stop trying to define yourself as anything in particular and stop expecting yourself to be anything in particular. Now, I wouldn't really put it that way because, you know, again, that's a somewhat judgmental statement, if you're at all intelligent. This has nothing to do with intelligence or unintelligence. This is simply the totally unexplainable dance of what we call this moment. There's no way of saying truly what this is in any way whatsoever, but it's entirely possible to say what it's not. It's not something with a specific form. It's not a bunch of human beings living on a planet. That interpretation is not true. That's a fantasy. So ultimately, there's no way of saying what this is, and that's ultimate, you know, within a non-dual perspective, within the supposed non-dual traditions, that's one of the most basic facts to be acknowledged. So in the Ashtavakra Gita, it asks the question, how can any of this possibly be described? And within Buddhism, the Buddha ultimately states, descriptions do not apply to this. Whatever this is, descriptions do not apply to this. And he pointed out that anyone who comes to what actually is no longer attempts to truly assess it in terms of physical form, feelings, perceptions, mental activities, or states of mind. Because these descriptions do not apply. Again, he was simply pointing to the limitation of thought and the obvious fantasy of thought. But these considerations are not meant to leave us with some focus on the world of thought, and most people are attempting to understand this through concepts, and that's why they can't relate. Within the world of apparent form and within the world of story, the average person can't relate to a non-dual perspective because they believe it has something to do with an intellectual understanding. There is no intellectual understanding of this moment. I have no understanding of this moment. Within the world of apparent form and storyline, I have the absolute sense that stories are fantasy. And so within whatever this is, it seems like I can point out the limitation of thought, but I can never tell you what this is. And I'm not interested in what this is. It just is. I can point out that nobody's making it happen. It's not caused, it simply occurs. And I can point out that your experience, all of your experience, also indicates that there is no possible way to describe what this is, and it simply occurs on its own. Either you relate to that consideration or you don't. If you don't, that's fine. If you do, that's fine. If you do, it's also the case that this will be an acknowledgement of the buzzing and tingling event of this moment, but there will be no attempt to define it. The whole idea that there's somebody existing who's aware of the moment, that falls away. It just becomes obvious that whatever this is, it makes itself obvious, but there's no way of saying what's going on here. It's just obviously that it feels like something's happening. There's just no way of saying what it is. And at night, even the feeling that something's happening disappears. And then it seems to reappear. So again, it comes to the acknowledgement of a dynamic that has no definable form. It has no explanation. And so we move into the miraculous. We move into the mysterious, magical dance of it all. The realization that in some way it's a gift, but nobody's giving the gift and there isn't anybody to receive the gift. More than that, it may become obvious that all of this simply unfolds on its own and that there is no need to attempt control. Any apparent attempt to control is not anyone's personal doing. It simply arises as an expression of whatever this is. So that one may begin to consider that if you make no effort at all, everything is just a flowing. Everything is simply a presentation. And that's not going to leave you defenseless day to day. Because what we take to be external circumstances and our internal response to those circumstances is not an external circumstance and our internal personal response to that circumstance. All of it is a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening automatically. The urge we have to respond to a particular situation in any way, whether we attempt to resist it or open to it or manipulate it, within that world of apparent form and apparent story, the urge to participate in any way at all is not anyone's personal doing. And the ability to participate in a particular way is not anybody's creation. All of it is not anybody's personal creation. All of it is a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening on its own. It's happening in the same way that the seasons change, that the rivers flow, that water evaporates, rises into the sky, condenses, falls to earth as rain, rolls off the earth into the rivers, flows through the rivers to the oceans to be evaporated more again. The water isn't thinking, how do I get this done? How am I supposed to respond to the sunlight? Should I evaporate or shouldn't I evaporate? It's not floating in the sky thinking, should I condense now and become a cloud? And should I condense even more and become rain? It simply happens. I'll read a few quotations, some lines that I've pulled from a number of different sources. I think this particular mix comes from some of the later statements of Nisargadatta Maharaj, and a little bit is from Taoism, and some of it is from the Ashtavakra Gita. So here are the statements. Ignore the intellect, return to not knowing. Someone seeking the way knows less and less until things simply are what they are. He or she whose thinking mind is dissolved achieves the indescribable state, free of ideas of me and mine and a sense of doing, aware that no thing actually exists, not acting even in acting. One who acts without being able to say why is liberated while still alive. Thoughts and actions are not limited to an individual. They are like the action of the wind. So that's pretty straightforward. Existence is an eventing, an occurring, an irrefutable and unexplainable urge to expression, like the blowing of the wind. And here's a note that I jotted down the other day. The happening that life is has its own innate order. No other order can be imposed upon it. Existence is an eventing, an occurring, without stable form, without explanation, without cause. Why focus on explanation? There is no explanation. Explanation itself is unexplainable. You will have to be satisfied with whatever occurs. Nothing else is possible. Wishing and hoping it otherwise is conflict. And let's see, let's end with three statements from three different sources. So we have one statement from Huineng, the great Zen master. This is not a matter of meditation and liberation. It's only a matter of seeing original nature. And the next statement comes from a great Tibetan master named Shechen Gyaltsap. Whatever arises is the display of primordial nature. And the last statement is from Jiddu Krishnamurti. Focusing on concepts, one never learns. To feel this movement is to learn. So the movement, this dynamic, this vibrant pulse and tingle, that's original nature. That's primordial nature. It's not a thought. It can't be described. When you ask the question, what is there when there is no thinking? At the end of the question, there's no thought, but it doesn't feel like there's nothingness. There's this, what we call the happening of this moment. It's not a thought. It presents itself. And the thoughts that come and go are simply a portion of this essential nature, this primordial nature, this moving, shifting dynamic, this vibrant liveliness. End of story. The realization is not the realization of a definition. The realization is this mysterious, vibrant occurring that simply happens on its own. Anyway, that's enough for today. I think I'll go for a walk. As always, this is simply presented for your consideration. I'm not asking you to look at life in this way. I'm not saying this is the one true way of looking at existence. I don't know what any of this is. I'm not saying that I have some deep, penetrating understanding of existence. I don't know what I am. The happening of this moment is a totally unexplainable happening within the world of apparent storylines and apparent form. This is what's known as a classical non-dual perspective. But actually, from a non-dual perspective, there isn't anything called a non-dual perspective. Descriptions don't apply to whatever this is. Whatever this is, it simply is. So I wish you well over the coming month. I wish you only good things, but as always, you know that I know you're going to get a mixed bag of things. So till next time, take care. Bye.